Thank you everyone for standing by, and welcome to the second Q&A call for students of the Email Prospecting for Freelancers Who Hate Cold Calling program at International Freelancers Academy. Before we get started, before we get started, I'll explain how it's going to work and then get into more details later. This call will be available for replay by Monday afternoon, and it'll be available at the EPP site where you're accessing all your modules. So the transcript should be available also there, and by the end of next week or possibly next Monday, but hopefully we'll have it then by next week. So for today's call, everyone is muted during the call. And how we will be working it is we'll be reading out the questions that we have received from you over the past few weeks, and then Ed will be answering them live. At the end of the call, if there is time for live Q&A through our webcast and phone attendees, we'll open it up then, and I'll give you the instructions on how to ask your questions at that time. So with all that aside, I think we're ready to start, Ed.
Great, Crystal. So I think you have all the questions, and I'll just take your lead if you want to go ahead and start us off.
Yeah, you bet. I'm going to take myself off speakerphone so you can hear me properly.
Okay.
So I'll start off with the top question and just work my way down the list.
Perfect.
You have a new prospect on your list you want to contact. So you email them the way you show us. Once that first email is sent out, when is a prudent time to follow up, assuming they do not reply within, say, a week or so? And what kinds of things should you be saying in your first follow-up email, then the second, third, and so on?
Okay, so you sent it out. You haven't gotten a reply. How long should you wait to follow up? Should you follow up? How many follow-up attempts should you make? Good question. Couple of things. There's a whole lesson, I think it's module 6, that's got a lot of detail about what I would do, but I want to give you a little bit more here and then maybe explain the reasoning behind my approach. First of all, I think it's important to know what open rates, response rates you could expect. You know, a lot of people think, oh, well, this is a silver bullet. This is going to give me a response to almost everything I send, and that's not the case. Considering the direct mail, you're lucky to get a 1% response rate. This approach, my experience is, you know, you can expect anywhere from 3 to 10%, sometimes higher, if you do it right in terms of response rate. So that's really high. That's very good. But you have to do it right. But it all starts with setting that expectation, okay? So you're not going to get responses to most of the emails you sent, even if the emails are brilliant and you're really creating some meaningful connections and you're extremely relevant and the timing is perfect, okay? In terms of follow-up, I do believe that you should do some follow-up because this is not a mass email campaign. You're not working the numbers. This is not about the law of averages. You're targeting very, very specific people. So I think it's worth spending a little bit more time where it makes sense to follow up just in case they meant to respond, but, you know, your email got caught in their inbox and it just got pushed down with, you know, 500 or 5,000 other emails. I would wait 2 weeks, roughly, 2 weeks. That's enough time, in my opinion, to give them a little bit of breathing room, not come across as a pest, but not so much time that your note is completely foreign to them. Usually within a couple of days, prospects really forget. But if you remind them, I think within that two-week period, it's going to sound familiar to them. Why wait 2 weeks? Keep in mind that you know, you really haven't earned much with this prospect yet. You haven't earned the right to follow up right away. You haven't gotten to a proposal stage yet, for example. Now, with proposals, you know, I recommend that you follow up immediately within just a few hours. But you're not there yet. You're still trying to make a connection here. You're throwing the ball to see if they toss it back to you. Because of that, you can't, you know, be too aggressive, or you're going to be perceived as someone that's just going to hound them, and then they're really not going to call you back. So wait 2 weeks. And here's what I would do, and this is what's worked for me. Rather than send them a brand new email, what I do is I go to my sent folder and I find the email that I had sent them originally, and I forward it back to them. So I don't say send again. I actually do a forward, but to their same email address. So that way I have the original email there, and then above it I type in a new, very short note saying something like, hey, you know, thought I'd follow back up with you after my note below from, you know, 2 weeks ago. I should have pointed out, you know, I have a page on my site with some samples that I think you'll find relevant. Here's the link. Hope you'll check them out, and hope we can chat soon if you know, if it makes sense. Something along those lines. So really short. You're doing a few things there. You're sending them the original note, so that way they have a record of you, of your original message to them, which is good. You're also providing them with some more information, but I would keep it to just one thing. I mean, it could be maybe a sample. It could be a link to a special report you wrote. It could be a link to a write-up about an award you won, or the fact that, you know, one of your some of your work has been featured somewhere important. Anything like that. But find and have a list of ideas that you can use for this follow-up attempt. Don't send the same information, because that's already further down on your original email. And then just see where that takes you. Now, if after a week or two you haven't received a response to that email, then you have a decision to make. Depending on how strong the connection was, let's say that you just felt, based on what you learned about this prospect in the news, or, you know, it was a referral and it was really strong, you just feel that you should give it one more attempt, then you may want to do something like place a follow-up call, or something I prefer to do in most cases is to take my original email, copy and paste that into a new document, and create an actual letter out of it, a letter I'm going to print, and I'm going to stuff into a regular envelope, and I'm going to mail via regular mail. And what tends to happen is that's now a third attempt, and usually the combination of those two emails and that letter over the course of a month or so will get you a response with some people. Just that repetition, that reminder. A lot of people just put things off to the side. They really do want to contact you. They see some potential value there, but they've just been so busy that they keep forgetting. And that last reminder, and the fact that it's a different medium, and it's something that people rarely do that way, it's could be very powerful. So to me, that's the last attempt. Again, whether you place a phone call or not, that really depends on how comfortable you feel doing that. I personally won't do it unless I've been referred and I know something about that person through the individual who referred me that would make me want to call them, because, you know, my friend insisted, hey, you really got to call them. I talked to them the other day, and they said that, yes, they're definitely interested in talking to you, to stay on top of them. You know, that information would shift my attitude towards a phone call. But everything else being equal, I would follow the approach I just outlined here. And again, there's more information on that in Module 6, I believe. So check that out. I explained it a little bit in a little bit more detail.
Okay, so the next question is very closely related, and it's, after the first email is sent out, do you follow up straight away with a phone call? You were just talking about phone calls, so this is kind of related, but...
Yeah, so the answer is no. Again, unless... Well, first of all, I wouldn't follow up right away with a phone call, even if I was referred, I felt that, I've earned the right. You probably haven't earned the right. I mean, it would have to be a very different situation. I think following up with a phone call is called for once the relationship is developed up to a certain point. Again, you're at the proposal stage or beyond that. I think it's okay. There's a level of trust there. You've earned your way to that. At this point, you haven't. So following up with a phone call right away, I think if anything, it's going to turn somebody off. Maybe the exception would be, I don't know, maybe you're a freelance business development expert or salesperson, and you're calling in a market that's, you know, kind of expects that level of aggressiveness. Maybe that's an exception, but I think in most cases, that's just going to be a turnoff. You know, the call is not going to increase the chances that the person will say yes to you. You need to let the email do the work. So I would let the email do the work. Again, if after 2 weeks nothing's happened, then I would go to the approach we just talked about.
Okay. So the next question we have here is, since getting email addresses seems to be the biggest challenge for me, can you say a bit more about how you use Jigsaw?
Okay. Jigsaw. I love Jigsaw. I use Jigsaw when I can't find the email address to the person I'm trying to reach through Google or other means, because it's more than likely going to be in Jigsaw. But the downside of Jigsaw is that it's a paid service. Now, when I started using it, it was super cheap. And then a couple of years ago, it went up. Maybe 2-3 years ago, they went up in price, and they were offering these monthly packages that gave you so many points. Points are their currency over there at Jigsaw. Gave you so many points a month, and each contact costs you 5 points. And I was doing a very small, targeted direct mail campaign at the time, so I forgot to cancel my plan, and it was kind of a recurring monthly thing. So I only needed enough for a month, and I forgot to cancel it. I ended up 3 months later, I realized I hadn't canceled it. So I ended up with 3 months worth of points. I had a ton of them. So I still have a balance in my account, even though I use it maybe once or twice a month. So it is a little pricey now. They've moved away from that, and the last time I checked, it was a yearly plan where you get so many points, but it's $250 a year or so. So if you're serious about doing this, I would consider it. I would try the other means that we talk about in the program first and see what you can find. Many times it's going to take a little bit more time, a little bit more work, but you can find the email addresses. If you're having a hard time or you just don't want to spend the time through Google and the other means, then I would do Jigsaw. As far as how to use Jigsaw, it's very, very easy. In fact, I don't think you even need an account to kind of play around with it. Just go in there and start searching. There's two basic ways to search. One is searching companies, and one is searching contacts. And let me go there, and so I'm talking about the right thing here. Okay, so in the main menu, the navigation, there's contacts and companies. Each of them has a drop-down list. It all depends what you're looking for and what information you already have. Now, you can go to Jigsaw if you already have a company name and you know what type of individual you're looking for, let's say a marketing manager, but you don't have a name or an email address. You just got a company name. So in that case, you go to the companies area, find companies, and you would type in, whatever, IBM. And then it's going to have a bunch of different search fields. I'm looking through it right now. It allows you to really filter by quite a bit. So what department? So I'll check off marketing. Okay, what level? Well, I'm looking at manager or director level, so you check off those boxes. What countries? U.S. Any states? Yes, IBM is huge. I'm only looking in Georgia and Florida. Okay. Revenue, that wouldn't apply to this particular search. So that's it. So you give it as much information as possible, and then what it's going to do is going to give you a list of everyone at IBM in Georgia or Florida who's in marketing department at a director or manager level that's in Jigsaw. That might still be too big a list for a company like IBM, so that probably wasn't a good example. But the whole point is, you know, you got the company, you don't have the contacts. Now, if you got the contact, so all you need, you got the contact, obviously you have the company then, all you need is the email address, go to the contacts area. Find contacts. And if you go there, there's a field for first name and last name. So type in, you know, Cindy Smith and in marketing, and then type in the company. And if it finds Cindy Smith at that company in marketing, it'll show you Cindy. At that point, you select her. It's going to give you a little bit more information before you even pay. at that point, it's going to ask you, okay, we have her. Is this the one? And if it is, if you want the rest of the information, meaning her direct dial and her email address, it's going to cost you 5 points from your account. So you acknowledge that, and as soon as you do that, it gives you the information. Not only that, but Jigsaw stores that contact in your database. So it keeps a database of all the contacts you've purchased, so to speak. It's a really simple tool to use. It's very, very cool. And what I love about it is the accuracy of it, especially over the last few years with so many people moving around from job to job. It's a member-maintained website, and it encourages people to go in and keep it accurate, because if you correct some information and it is accurate, the corrections you made, you get points for that. So it encourages people to go in there and just check on the quality of the information. And there, you know, it used to be maybe one out of two contacts is all I could find a few years ago. Now it's almost every contact I look for I can find. There are over 25 million business contacts in there from all over the world. So it's a tremendous resource.
Okay. Ready for the next question then?
Yep.
Okay. So since getting email addresses seems to be the biggest challenge, I just read that.
That sounded familiar.
It's a trick question. Yeah. Here, we'll go on to the question number 4. What is the best way to present myself when talking to prospects after submitting letters by email?
Good question. All right. So, and I think I mentioned this in the course. This is obviously not a sales program. This is really all about finding potential prospects. And it goes beyond that, as you guys know. You know, we talked about developing your value statement, finding the right target markets, and so forth. But it's really about attracting people through email. And, once you got a conversation with them, how you land that client, that's beyond the scope of this. But let me give you some ideas here, because it is a very valid question. The point of the email, the goal of your email is not to close the business, is not to land the client right there in the first attempt or the first contact. Your goal is to get to a conversation. You're trying to get them, again, I think I used in the first Q&A call this analogy of just playing ball and tossing a ball back and forth. You toss the ball to them, and all you want is for them to toss it back to you. People who don't toss it back, you move on. Those who toss the ball back, you know there's a reason to now play ball. So your goal is to get them to reply to your email and say, this sounds interesting. I think we should talk. And if they don't go beyond that, your goal is now to get to that conversation, to close, if you will, the conversation. So think of it that way. That's why the email is so short. All you're trying to do is pique enough interest for them to say, tell me more. I might be interested. You tell them a little more and say, can we schedule a brief conversation to just discuss your situation and see if we have a potential fit. Again, don't assume anything. Come across as a true professional, as someone who, okay, you're interested, cool. Even that doesn't tell me if we really have a fit here. So why don't we get on the phone or on Skype, have a conversation, and see what we both think. It's a mutual exchange. Don't think of it as, will they pick me? Because you have to pick them too, based on the conversation you have. So keep in mind that your goal is always to get that conversation with a prospect, that appointment. The other thing is try to avoid talking about yourself and your services. Unless you've been asked a question about them, and you obviously got to address the question. But what you want in this conversation is to really get the prospect to talk about their needs, about themselves, about what's going on. You want to know, what challenge are they trying to solve? I mean, so what's up? What's going on over there? How can I help? And, of course, you're going to have to ask smart questions. I would focus all my questions around things such as need. What are their needs? What are their pain points right now? What are their challenges as it relates to what I do? timing. I mean, how urgent is this? Are you looking to do something about this soon, or is this something you're just kind of starting to explore? Authority question. So you want to be careful here, but you want to try to find out, is this the person who would be making a decision on hiring someone like me, or is this just someone who's doing some initial research? And then finally, do they have the financial wherewithal, the ability, the budget to pay you? Can they afford you, in other words? So you want to ask some questions around that. But notice that all these questions do a few things. It gets the conversation going, and it allows you to determine if this prospect would be a good fit for you. You think they are because you specifically picked them through the process that we teach in this program, but you don't know for sure. So by having this conversation, you can better determine that, and then the prospect can get a better feel for how you work and what you know and how you can help them. And then you want the conversation to be focused on the prospect, and then you want to propose something, and whatever that next step might be for you and your business. In my case, it's really trying to provide or suggest a solution to the challenge, to define a project and scope out a project, and then get to the proposal stage next. And your situation might be different. You know, you might involve an on-site visit and further discussion. So you need to decide ahead of time what your sales process looks like. You need to write that out, map it out, and keep that in mind as you're talking to prospects. But going back to the original point, is always keep in mind that you're trying to get to that conversation. You're not trying to close the deal right there in the email or even in that initial phone call. So that's it.
Okay. So the next question is kind of, it's related again to the sales part, but what they're asking is, what are the tips and tricks to closing the sales deal?
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's really beyond the scope of the program, but keep in mind, you really need a system to qualify the prospect. You want to have questions ready ahead of time. I gave you some areas to focus on, but I would create a list of questions based on those areas I just talked about. And what I do, I mean, I have a list of questions I got to memorize by now, but for a long time I kept a sheet by my phone. And when prospects called and when I did get the chance to talk to somebody, I used them as my guide just to make sure I covered all the areas and to ensure that I had a qualified prospect there. So have those questions ready. Don't wing it. And again, I think a lot of prospects, and this depends on the kind of work you do, but some of them are not going to have something scoped out. Some of them are not really going to know what they want. It all depends on your field. My field, most of my prospects know what they want. The pretty much defined or scoped out a project, and they know they need help. They're looking for someone to help them with it. So it's a little easier there. But I've worked with clients that don't know. They know they got this problem, and, you know, they think I might be able to help them, but they're not really sure, so they want to hear from me. Of course, I'm going to ask them questions, not just to qualify them, but just to see. I want to know more about their challenge, what their attitudes are about their challenges, because I want to know if I can actually help them. I don't know. So have those questions ready. It's a good idea to really take some time to draft those and, of course, play it by ear depending on what kind of answers you're getting. I do want to point something out here, though. One of the biggest mistakes I think freelancers and everybody, really all salespeople, make when they're in this initial phone conversation is they're so excited to be talking to the prospect that they talk themselves out of the sale. They just start talking, and they start volunteering information that the prospect didn't even ask them about. Oh, did you know that I won this award? Did you know that I've also worked for this and this company? Resist the temptation to offer more information than needed. Don't offer anything that you weren't asked about. And I learned this the hard way a few years ago because I was, you know, prospects were contacting me, and they liked what they saw. They obviously contacted me for a reason. They're kind of sold in a way on possibly hiring me. I don't need to throw more at them in order to really convince them. The way you convince someone is by asking questions and being very genuine with your responses. And, you know, if you think that really you can't help this person, then tell them. They're going to respect you a lot more for that. So don't volunteer more information than you need to. They've probably read it already, and what could happen is an objection will come up. Oh, did you know I've worked for this company? Well, what if that's a direct competitor of theirs? And now they start thinking, oh, if he's worked for that company, I wonder if he's still working for them. I don't know if I want to share sensitive information with him. You know, that's a competitor of ours. So they may not have known that. Don't bring it up. It could actually end up being an objection for you. So just a little tip there, but again, this is not really a selling program, but those are good questions.
So the next question, going back sort of to the program content, does email let me read this again. Do email blasts still work as traditional email marketing?
They do. There's a place for traditional email broadcasts. I'm trying to get away from that word blast. I've never liked it. It just blast sounds like, you know, I don't care. I'm just going to blast everybody. Mm. Broadcast is a little, it's better. It works. But for freelancers and self-employed professionals, that type of marketing, that type of email marketing is best used as a nurturing tool, not a lead generation tool. So it's a great way to broadcast your newsletter or news announcements about your company, new services, that sort of thing. Or maybe there's a, you know, every once in a while you might have a new service offering and you're doing this deal. You're offering some sort of discount. I mean, I'm not huge on that, but, you know, that could be a legitimate way of doing it because these are your prospects and your clients. But most of what you'll use it for is not to cold call with email, is to nurture those relationships. And the problem is that's the kind of email marketing most of us know. That's why the approach I teach here in this program is so hard at first to kind of fully grasp because it's different. It's not the traditional, let's automate the blast and send it out to everybody. So resist the temptation to, and this is another point, related point, resist the temptation to automate every facet of your business and automate your marketing and automate your communications. Even though it's a great nurturing tool, do take the time to reach out to past clients and prospects with valuable or interesting information, with an article that made you think of them, with some ideas, or you saw that somebody won an award or got a promotion, send them a note. A handwritten note. I mean, gosh, wouldn't that be something, right? So that's where the real nurturing happens. The newsletter is good. It's a good stay top of mind type tool, but it's no replacement for real human contact, one-on-one human contact. So it has its place.
Okay, so the next question, it's one I can relate to. I can't seem to get my script to under 125 words or less. Any ideas?
It is hard. It's very hard. I think, all right, a couple of things. This goes to something I talked about earlier, which is keep in mind what the goal of this email is. You're not trying to solve world hunger here. You're not trying to get all the way to the proposal stage or contract or the project. You're not trying to land the client. You're trying to give them enough information to pique their interest and reply with a, this sounds interesting. Tell me more. Yes, I'd like to chat or, yeah, you know, we may have an opportunity for you. Can you check back with me in 4 weeks? You know, anything along those lines, that's all you want. Think of this as, you know, requiring several steps. The next step is actually closer to the email than you think. It's not way out there. So with that in mind, you don't have to throw everything in the email. The first thing you want to do, is we talk about in the program, is make that meaningful and relevant connection. That is absolutely key. Make it quickly. Don't get into all this detail and expand on it. Just, hey, congratulations on this, or hey, I heard about you from my friend, you know, Susan, or whatever. Whatever that connection is going to be, get to the point. Your value statement is a great place to really cut back on words. You need, and this is very difficult, but you need to create a value statement that basically gets right to the point. What you do, for whom, why you're different, what relevant value you bring to the table, and or whom you've worked for that's worth mentioning. That's a lot to do in one or two sentences. You may have to create a different version for your email messages because, you know, having that value statement is great for your website. You may want to expand on that a little bit, but you don't have the room in the email. So look at your value statement as an opportunity for cutting back words. Get to the point faster. And then don't throw a bunch of links in there. Oh, and here's some samples, and here's this. Pick one. Pick one thing. Or suggest the next step, or, you know, talk about, hey, you know, I got some ideas based on my work with, you know, in this industry or with these companies. I'd love to run them by you. Can we chat? You know, so right away, make your call to action and get out. I got a lot of you sent your email scripts for a critique. Saw some great work out there. And you know what? For the most part, most of you were sticking to it. But I would say in the value statement is where things got a little long. And just so check there and keep in mind your goal. You're just trying to pique enough interest. And you know what? Here's the thing, something else. This approach alone, the fact that you're leading with a meaningful connection and you're keeping it very short, just like you would to a friend, right, a quick email. This approach alone is so personal and so relevant and so different that enough is going to pique interest. So the method itself is goes in your favor. So keep that in mind.
Okay, great. The next question is, the process of creating a list seems so overwhelming. Where do you start?
Good question. You really need to think about that. Think about, okay, what would make the most sense? What would make the best prospect for me? And that's why we covered that in one of the lessons, you know, really honing in on who your ideal client is. And that's why I wanted to spend so much time on that, because it is an important factor. And that's really going to determine how you approach your list building effort. You need to think about what factors and what variables are most important to you. And by looking at clients that have come on board over the last, say, couple of years, think about their attributes. Okay, what is it about them? You know, why are they such a great client? Why were they in need of my services, and why do they stick around? And use that as kind of a guidepost. And I was talking to a colleague this morning about this. Here's a criteria I like to use that makes sense for me. Probably the biggest criteria is this company, well, first of all, it's got to be the right size. I prefer working for upper end of small to mid-sized companies. And, you know, every industry is different as far as, like, revenue size. What does that mean? In my case, you know, upper end of small could be 25 to 50 million. But I prefer somewhere between there all the way up to, let's say, $500 million a year. In technology, that's considered a mid-sized company. And so for me, it's really about, are they in that range? Okay, so that narrows it down a bit. But then what types of products or services or solutions do they sell? I'm interested in building lists of prospects that are selling to either markets that are hot, they're markets that are spending a lot of money, because I do marketing. So if it's hot, then their marketing department's going to be well funded, which means they have money to spend with me. Or their technology, their products or services are in high demand right now. They're in a category that's just really, really hot. So that those are the things I look for, and that's my starting point. And so then I'll start searching publications for companies that are being profiled, talked about, that are doing well because they're providing and marketing solutions that are that really resonate with their target market today because of the economy, because of market factors, because of consumer demand in a certain area, whatever. But those are companies that are going to be willing to spend money on somebody like me who develops content, marketing content, which they'll need to then continue to market those products and services. So that's what makes sense for me. But, you know, maybe for you it could be something different. It could be a combination of that, and then you could add another two or three filters under that. So your background, you know, specific sector you have a lot of contacts in, so you want to kind of stick to that. Or location. You only want to look for companies in this metropolitan area or in these three areas, you know, that might be important for you. I hate to say which one's more important because, you know, everyone's different. Preferences, profession, your field. So, but those are factors to keep in mind. Just the biggest, most important thing with list creation is to have criteria that makes sense. And it's going to yield you a list of prospects that are going to be attracted to your message. So, and the best place to start is, again, looking at your business, looking at your ideal clients, and asking, you know, looking at what attributes do they all share that you can then go out to the market and start looking for similar ones. Long answer to a short question.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really the end of the questions that I had to begin with before we started the call. So, I know you had some other things you wanted to talk about. Should I let everyone know how they can start asking their questions, and maybe you can jump into a couple of those things you wanted to cover?
Yeah, why don't we do that? Why don't we open it up? There are a couple of questions out there. I'd be happy to take them, and then I can I don't have a lot, but I did want to mention a couple of things that I had noticed.
Sure. So for those of you, I'll explain now how you can ask your question here. For those of you that are on the phone, what you need to do is press star 2 on your keypad. And what this will do is basically raise your hand, and I'll unmute you. So it'll in the order that we received your question. So what I'll do is call out the last four digits of your number and let you know that you're unmuted. And all we ask is that you state your name and then go ahead and ask your question. And then once you're done, I'll mute you back so that we don't get any background noise or anything like that. And so those of you who are on the webcast who are listening primarily through there, what you'll need to do is just type your question into the submission form on the lower left-hand of the side of the page that you're looking at. And then I'll read those out again for Ed to answer. So I'll be hopping back and forth between the two panels to make sure we're getting all the calls, or getting all the questions, I mean. So go ahead, raise your hand or type in your question. While we're waiting for those, why don't you cover one or two of those things, Ed?
Sure. Let me see here. So one of the big things that I was finding when I was looking at critiques was something I've already mentioned, which is do not overlook the fact that you have to find and make that meaningful and relevant connection right away. Some of you had left it out and had kind of resorted to, gone back to a more of a traditional email about, okay, hi, Bill, you know, I help companies do this and that and the other. That's not the way you want to do this. That's how everybody else does it. So if you're not sure what that's about, make sure to go to Module 3. There's a lesson there on how to find meaningful connections that you can leverage. That I think, is kind of the meat of this program. That's probably the most important module of them all, because that's what distinguishes this from so many other email marketing approaches. So the other thing I was noticed, some folks were doing a kind of taking a what I call a direct mail approach to their emails. So instead of making that connection, well, or they would make a connection, but then they would, it was a little weak, And what they were really doing with the email is try to pitch or try to get the prospect to download a special report. And that's something we teach in our direct mail program. That approach works really well when it's direct mail, but with this email approach, it's not going to work as well because you're not really trying to generate leads here. This has gone beyond that. You're really trying to get to a conversation. So think of this email approach as more of a more advanced. I mean, this is like hyperspeed. Direct mail, you're taking it one step at a time. You're really starting with, hey, I got some information here. But it's not one-to-one. It's one-to-many. And you're selling the special report in a way. All you want the prospect to do is to download the special report. Well, this email is different. You don't want them to download a special report. You're offering something else, a link, whether it's a special report or samples or an article or anything else. It's kind of a proof point. But what you're really trying to get to is that conversation. And you do that by establishing that meaningful connection, explaining your value very quickly, and, you know, can't even get my words out, stating your call to action, which will be hopefully, you know, a quick chat. You can use a proof point. You can use a special report as a proof point if you want, but that shouldn't be the focus of the email. Let me see if there's...
I've actually got a couple questions here now, Ed.
Okay, let's go to those.
Okay, I actually missed one earlier, so I'm gonna go back and ask that one that we received by email this morning. I don't think I sent that to you, Ed. So this question was, maybe I'm not looking hard enough, but as a copywriter, I'm not seeing a lot of trigger events for the manufacturers I'm targeting. Is it a bad niche, or am I missing something?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know what niche you're in. I will tell you that a lot of trigger events aren't as obvious as some of the ones I mentioned. So, you know, a lot of the ones I talked about were really obvious ones, right? Positive or negative financial announcements, you know, new financing, new funding received if it's a startup, a new product launch, expansions. But, you know, there could be other things, too. Let's say new management or ownership. There wouldn't necessarily be, you know, a big article on that, but you might find a press release on that, and they have a new director of marketing or a VP of marketing, for example, and that could have been in a news release. The other thing is, and we don't get into this too much in the program, but check social media as well. So a lot of your prospects, you know, have a social media presence, and a lot goes on in those, you know, their Twitter stream or their LinkedIn profiles, if it's individuals, or the company's Facebook page. They talk about a lot of things there that may not necessarily make a press release or make it to an article or a news announcement or anything like that. So you can usually uncover some serious gold there, because a lot of companies are talking about a lot of things in their social media feeds that they're not mentioning anywhere else. So I would suggest going to social media. And then look for things such as, you know, here's one that a lot of people don't really leverage enough, I don't think, is job openings. I've had some success with this. I've mostly talked with other freelancers who have done this, is they'll look for companies who are looking to fill full-time positions in departments that they help. So let's say a designer, they're looking for a full-time or a part-time designer, and they have an ad out, Craigslist or, you know, somewhere on the web, or, you know, again, they maybe announce it in their Twitter stream or Facebook or LinkedIn. That's an opportunity to reach out and say, you know, I'm not looking for a full-time job, but I can probably help you in this area and do it more cost-effectively and just as reliably as a full-time position. Of course, you got to come up with something better than that. And, you know, you want to establish that meaningful connection, and you want to talk about your value briefly. But job openings are a great opportunity. So sometimes they're not very obvious, you're just going to have to look a little harder, especially in fields like manufacturing, which sounds like what you target. You know, a lot of manufacturers are very reserved. They have no reason to really talk about what they're doing, especially private label manufacturers. They're very quiet about what they do. So it's going to be a little harder, but, you know, a new plant opening, things like that, it might be a little harder to find.
Okay, and we have another question if you want to jump into
sure.
that.
Yeah.
So this one is Elaine. She's on the call. My audience is publisher. They keep their news close by because of competition. So after they promote once a book is launched, how to bring in the connection in the email when there's no meat?
So they keep the news to themselves. They don't really,
quiet.
They're not out
right.
there. Yeah, which is the same problem as, you know, we just talked about with some manufacturers. That might be difficult. So that's why you're going to have to do a little bit more digging possibly. And if that doesn't yield anything, I would look at the other two ways of establishing that meaningful connection. And this goes to the other person who asked about trigger events, which is naming a high-profile client or a big relevant accomplishment of some sort that you've had, or leveraging a mutual connection. So I would look there. I think LinkedIn is severely underused for that. I mean, if you've developed a LinkedIn profile, you've connected with people there, you know, you can do it. If you go to the advanced search feature in LinkedIn in the top right corner, click on advanced, the search criteria you can create is just simply amazing. And you might find that some of the organizations you're looking to target are direct connections of people in your network. And depending on how well you know them, you might be able to approach some of them to see if they can broker an introduction or see if you can at least mention their name or that sort of thing. So LinkedIn is a great way to find out, you know, is there a mutual connection you can leverage? And then naming other clients that they might recognize. I mean, that is such a huge credibility build. It doesn't have to be a high-profile client. It just needs to be someone that they've heard of in their industry. It could be anybody that they would recognize and show them that you're credible, that you've been around, and that you obviously do great work, because if that company hired you, then you must be good. Or a relevant accomplishment. So, you know, award, we talked about, you know, if you've written a book. I mean, writing a book is a great reason to be able to say this, right? Just write a book so you can actually say I'm the author of. It doesn't even need to be a big book. You know, and it sounds intimidating for a lot of people, especially if you don't think you're a writer, but it doesn't have to be anything massive. I've seen some great books that have been huge credibility builders for some people, not all of them self-employed, that have been, you know, 50 pages. But the fact that it's bound book, it impresses a lot of prospects. So look at those areas as well. Don't think that it has to be published news and it has to be a trigger event of that sort. And again, social media is another great one that we really kind of downplay, but we really didn't talk too much about it in the program itself.
Okay. That's all that's come in so far. Let me take a look and make sure nobody's raised their hand. So again, if you missed it, press *2 to raise your hand if you're on the call. And if you're on the webcast, all you need to do is type your question into the little form on the left-hand side. Ed, you had some other things that you wanted to cover while we're waiting for questions, I think.
Yeah, and I'm just going through some of the email critiques and looking for patterns. So one thing I did notice with some of them is that in the value statement, you really want to get to those key points right away. What you do for whom, why you're different, what relevant value you bring to the table, or whom you've worked for that's worth mentioning. Some of them kind of led with, well, I work with, you know, these types of companies when they're overloaded. You know, that's just not a good way to start it off. You don't want to lead with something like that. It's kind of, that just that's too tactical, in my opinion. You want to talk about value, and you want to mention things that are going to give you credibility. I wouldn't position yourself as someone like a temp. Well, when they're too busy, they come to me. Because guess what? They could come to anybody. I mean, at that point, you're commoditizing yourself. So be careful when you're developing those value statements, and make sure you focus on those big five items. And, you know, you don't have a lot of room anyway, so don't waste space talking about something that's going to commoditize you. And let me see.
We've got a question on the line, if you want me
okay.
to.
Okay. Let me, actually, before you get to that, let me, before I forget,
sure.
Here's another pattern that I was seeing is that, and I know with some of these it's harder to find a meaningful connection, but some people were writing scripts that that talk about something that's not that important that they notice on the prospect's website. You know, I noticed that you offer these services. That's great. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. And it didn't even have anything to do with the services, or even if it did, it just, so that's kind of a weak connection. The company's website is yet another source to find potential trigger events. So look a little harder there. Secondly, don't use that as a connection. Try to go a little bit more strategic. Try to find something a little bit more meaningful. That's going to be, again, I can't emphasize that enough, that's going to be the biggest thing to making this work. And related to that, I would say, you know, don't stress out over the fact that, gosh, this company, I can't find anything. You know what? If you really have tried and you've gone through these three ways of establishing that, you really can't find anything, that's okay. I mean, move on. Don't try to make it fit. Try to stick with organizations where you really have something to talk about. And if you don't right now, give it some time. Check back, you know, a month or two later. Or you know, move on to other organizations and see what you can dig up. So I know that's hard sometimes because maybe you started with a very small list and you're trying to find something for each one. But sometimes if you try to make it fit and it's not right, you're going to get disappointed and you're going to get discouraged and you're going to give up. So stick with the ones. You're going to be able to find good stuff on some of the others. Just go with those.
Okay, so we'll take the call now, or the question from our caller now. Leon, I'm going to unmute you now, and then you can go ahead and ask your question.
Am I unmuted?
You bet.
You're on.
Okay. All right. I couldn't tell from your previous answer a little while ago whether you were sort of for including a link to a special report or against.
Okay, good question. So I am for it, but not as a central theme of the email. So as a credibility builder or something for them to check out to read a little bit more about you and your message or you know, how you help other companies, perfect. But I wouldn't, you know, because the direct mail approach that we talk about, that we teach,
right.
is all about the report.
Right.
And you don't want your email to be all about the report. It takes a backseat to the meaningful connection.
Okay, so you see it as a plus as long as it's done correctly.
Yeah, as a kind of a, hey, and by the way, I published this report recently on this topic. Here's a link to it if you want to check it out, that kind of thing.
Okay, got it.
Make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, and it could be extremely powerful. I mean, it just gives you one more way to leverage the, you know, the report itself. I mean, these things take a lot of time and effort to put together. I'm a big believer in getting as much value out of these as you can. So we definitely use it. Just have it take a back seat instead of leading with it.
Okay, got it. Good.
Sure thing.
Okay, so I'm just going to mute Leon again so that in case he has something noisy in the background. I don't have any other questions coming in right now, Ed, so if there's more that you wanted to cover in those critiques. I'm not sure.
What you have to... I, I don't. Let me just check one more thing in here.
We only have a couple minutes left until the top of the hour. I know we weren't completely confined to an hour, so we can.
Yeah, there's all right. So here's something else. Some of you went ahead and created a second email, which I think is smart, to send to friends and relatives, people you know fairly well, just to see if they knew anybody they could refer to you. That's a different type of email, but I did have some advice there because this can make all the difference between whether or not you actually get a referral or not. So rather than saying, hey, do you know anyone you can send my way, right? Something along those lines, which is what most of us do. Hey, I'm trying to grow my business. If you know anyone who needs web design, you know, please send them my way. There's a better approach to that. This you know, it's hard for people to think of something if the question is too broad. But it's been proven that if you ask very specific questions, if you ask for very specific things, your results skyrocket. So instead of asking, do you know anyone, it's better to ask specifically for one or two types of prospects. So do you know anyone who has complained to you recently about their website needing a serious overhaul or about really needing to update their marketing materials but not having enough time to find someone to do it? Okay, that, the recall rate goes way up because now you're giving them something to hang on to. And what I've found is that, yeah, sure, you're still going to get a lot of people saying, you don't know, not off the top of my head, but I'll let you know. But now they got something. Okay, they're going to remember that better than a website. And it's going to increase the chances that, oh, you know what? My dad has this business, and their website's 10 years old, and everyone complains about it. He's been talking about how he knows he needs to redo this, and, I mean, he's got the money to get it done. It's just he doesn't even know where to start. I'd be happy to send you to him. Okay, so keep that in mind. I think it is a good idea to reach out to your network, but help them out. Give them something to grab onto.
I'm just checking, Ed.
I think that's it. Do you have any others that have come in since then?
You know, I haven't. I've had a comment on a question from a webinar yesterday, on the webinar yesterday. So you can go ahead and just email that question to us, and I can send it to Ed when he has some time off the call. But otherwise, I don't have any other current questions. So do you want to wrap it up, Ed?
Go ahead and wrap it up. I appreciate everyone being on, and, of course, you'll tell them how they can get to the replay here in a little bit. But, it's great feedback from you guys, so I appreciate all of you who have taken the time to go through it. And keep in mind the critique offer is open till the end of the year, so you got time if you haven't done so already. Just send it to us and give me a few days. And I promise to get you review and some comments back to you. But take advantage of that offer. That's part of the program, and I'd be happy to help you out there.
And to access the recording for this call and the previous call, all you need to do is go to the email prospecting program site where you're accessing all of the program materials already, internationalfreelancersacademy.com/EPP. And you have your password there. If you've lost your password, send me an email, crystal@internationalfreelancersacademy.com, and I'll help you out. But we have the recordings there. I'll have this recording up there by Monday afternoon, probably earlier, but Monday afternoon for sure guarantees I'll have it there. And then again, the transcript should be available by the end of next week. And just a reminder, that site is available to you indefinitely. So all those modules, all that training, the call recordings, the transcripts, everything is, it's beyond the end of the year. It's for as long as you want it. So
good point. Thanks for reminding everyone of that.
Yeah. Otherwise, that's it. So we're going to wrap this call up. We don't have any more calls scheduled, but if you do have any questions or have any concerns, feel free to give us an email and I'll make sure to answer it. So thanks and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.